The Jericho Network on Westwood One.
Thanks for downloading Talk is Jericho. I've got former KISS guitar player Bruce Kulick in studio today. He was sitting at Paul and Gene's table at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame ceremony. Got a lot of behind-the-scenes stories about the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, about KISS, about how he feels not being inducted as a KISS band member. 14 years Bruce played with KISS, played on some of their biggest records in the 80s. We're going to talk to him about so much stuff, but first, I can't tell you how much my three dogs, Jaws, Bella, and Nibbles, are loving BarkBox. We get 4 to 6 full-size products every month. They're always different, but they're always great quality. We get toys and healthy organic snacks in every package, every month, every time. My dogs go crazy when they see that box, and my kids love to open the box up with the doggy woggies. I'm telling you, you got to try this too. Just go to BarkBox.com/Jericho to save 20% off your first subscription. That's BarkBox.com/Jericho. Save 20% off your subscription. Make your dogs and kids happy. It's fun for the whole family. That's BarkBox.com/Jericho. Hey, super big news, people! Cheapo Air is running a sweepstakes throughout the month of June. One lucky traveler will win 50 tickets. Yeah, I said 50 tickets to travel the United States. That is huge. All you have to do is download the Cheapo Air app and enter their absolute getaway for a chance to win. That's it. No purchase necessary. Although as long as you have the app, you might as well fly out to see Fozzy's next show overseas in the UK. Book a trip to Europe to see Fozzy June 14th at Download. Or London is Jericho, my spoken word show on June 12th or 15th. It'll be fruit at Leicester Square Theater. Take Cheapo Air. Come on over the pond and come see Y2J. Come see your boy, right? Yeah, boy. Even if you don't win, you can save big during checkout with promo code Y2J. So visit CheapoAir.com today. And remember, use my promo code Y2J to save serious cash.
The following program is a PodcastOne.com production.
He's a world champion wrestler, best-selling author, actor, and lead singer of Fozzy. Now he's rocking the podcast world.
Marvelous.
This is Talk is Jericho. Talk is Jericho. Starring Chris Jericho.
Welcome to Talk is Jericho, the Pot of Thunder, and Rock and Roll. The spell you run will be broken by Chris Jericho. Yeah, a KISS song to say the least, and Bruce Kulick from KISS, who actually played that song live on stage with Paul and Gene, will be here. But first, the Pod of Thunder has arrived. The People's Podcast has arrived. Let's go for a ride.
Oh, my time has come. Oh, my time has Killington people don't fear the reaper. Baby, don't you understand? People, don't you fear the creeper? Come on, baby, take my hand. La 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 la. La 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 la.
Woo! Hello! Welcome to Talk is Jericho. Jerichoholics, how the hell are ya? Very, very happy to have you here today. I know there's literally hundreds of thousands of podcasts you can schwalz from, and you schwalz to be here with me and Bruce Kulick. Should be in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Didn't quite get in, although in my mind, in all KISS fans' minds, he definitely deserves to be in there. I was at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, so excited to see him sitting at Paul and Gene's table and having him and Eric Singer come up and say hi to me during the ceremony was amazing. Half of the KISS Revenge lineup coming to say hi to Jericho. Good times, great tastes. Bruce has so much to talk about, behind-the-scenes stories of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, behind-the-scenes stories of being in KISS. He's got a lot of stories. He's got a lot of thoughts about the KISS members who were inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Lots to talk about. I just played Don't Fear the Reaper. Obviously, amazing, amazing tune. Did you see the Will Ferrell, Chad Smith drum-off on Jimmy Fallon? Now, first of all, Fallon is a genius for booking this thing in the first place, because people have been talking about this for years, about how Chad Smith and Will Ferrell look alike. And I don't know how he finally got this together, but they went on the Tonight Show dressed the same. Will was even kind of talking a little bit like Chad, and they look exactly alike. If you haven't seen it, you got to go Google it. Google Will Ferrell, Chad Smith drum off. Now, Chad, great guy, good friend of mine. He's like, dude, you got to see this. You're going to pee your pants. And I was like, okay. But to see them sitting on the couch, there's two parts, so make sure you watch both parts. To see them sitting on the couch, dressed alike and almost sounding alike, was so funny. And then the drum off was even better, because obviously Will was not playing drums. It was Questlove who played. And Will was kind of air drumming. And then Chad played, you know, some wicked beats. And then they finished off with Will coming out with the cowbell and going into Don't Fear the Reaper, where the rest of the Chili Peppers came out and they all jammed on it together. Which is funny, because if you remember the Saturday Night Live skit that they did years ago with Fallon, where he was on drums laughing, which is basically what Jimmy did in every skit, I believe. He just laughed all the time. And it was like, it became the famous, you know, I've got a fever, and the only cure is more cowbells. Christopher Watkins playing record producer Bruce Dickinson. And I always wondered, did they even realize that Bruce Dickinson was actually the singer of Iron Maiden? Or was it just kind of like a coincidental thing or something along those lines? But a super funny bit. If you haven't seen it, go check it out now. Will Ferrell, Chad Smith, drum off. And the thing, I watched it with my kids the other day. It's gotten over 20 million views already. And it was like, you know, 3 days ago. Just shows the power of word of mouth. And it's funny, because now, like, Chad Smith is the biggest star in the Red Hot Chili Peppers. He's like more popular than Flea is now. So there you go. Congrats to my bud Chad and Will Ferrell for a very funny drum off. And my congrats to my bud Jimmy Fallon for booking that. Like I said, he's not afraid to take a chance and get that going. And it was very, very, very funny. All right, so this Sunday we had Payback, the WWE pay-per-view, and once again, Egypt came on, gave his predictions. Not sure exactly who did better. I know you guys keep track of that stuff, so let me know on the Twitter who had the better predictions. Was it me, or was it Egypt? But let's review the show right now. Kicked off with the haircut match with El Torito and Hornswoggle. El Torito gets the victory. Hornswoggle goes Baldski. And it's always funny to watch someone get their hair cut. And I don't know why. You know, it's always the same thing in wrestling. No, don't do it. Don't do it. Guy gets sit down in the barber chair and they shave his head. And I'm not really too sure what exactly the future is for Hornswoggle, but he's always had a job. For like the last 6 or 7 years, they always find stuff for him. And of course, he shows up on Raw the next day with the typical wig, screaming about, I'm not bald, I'm not bald. And it's the same thing Vince McMahon did, same thing Kurt Angle did. Basically, every single person who's ever had their head shaved in the WWE comes back the next night with a wig on, claiming they did not get their head shaved. So there you go. A good match, though. Those guys work hard. Good mix. And once again, anytime you can find a guy like Hornswoggle or Torito, I've never met Torito, but Hornswoggle, nice guy, and I'm glad he's working. And making a living, eh? Cesaro and Sheamus. I thought Cesaro was going to win. In some ways, maybe he should have won, but it seems like they still want Sheamus to have a little steam. Good match. Good finish. You know, a little quick one out of nowhere after the big swing and all that sort of stuff. I almost wonder if the guys aren't a little bit miscast, though. I think the fans would rather see Cesaro as a babyface at this point and Sheamus as a heel. But once again, it's all part of the build. People! So keep paying attention and see what goes on. I'm sure you will see a change fairly soon. Ryback and Curtis Axel versus Cody Rhodes and Goldust. All obviously a backdrop to the breakup of the Rhodes brothers, which seems about a year too late. One of the hottest teams earlier in the year, and now kind of just another couple guys on the roster. So maybe this can heat up Cody a little bit, but it seems like it's a little bit too late for that. They should have done it maybe 6 months ago when they were the hottest team in the WWE. Rusev and Big E, pretty much standard fare. Rusev gets the win. We knew that was going to happen. Still not sold on Rusev. M sold on Lana. She's a hot one. She's a hot one. She's a hot one. She's a hot one. Not a not one. Kofi Kingston, Bo Dallas. Never actually came to fruition. Kane came down and beat the heck out of Kofi, and Bo just smiled a lot. Once again, not completely convinced on Bo either. A lot of people say, oh, he's got some Jericho qualities. Don't really see the Jericho qualities. Of course, because I'm Jericho, so I don't. It's like when people tell me I look like Gordon Ramsay, I don't see that either. So, anyways, Van Damme versus Bad News Barrett. Good match. Barrett gets the victory. I expected that. Barrett on a roll. Hopefully they continue. Hopefully Barrett continues to develop. A big fan of Bad News Barrett. I'm a fan of RVD as well. A Talk is Jericho alumni. But pretty much I got exactly what I was expecting with that. A good match and the finish that fits. The Daniel Bryan, Brie Bella, Stephanie segment. Loved it. Love how Brie quit on behalf of her man. The only thing I don't like about this is it kind of slightly punks out Daniel Bryan that his wife, you know, is almost tougher than he is in some ways, like in that she will stand up for herself and he's the one that should have, I don't know. I just, like I said on previous podcasts, I don't like it when they bring married couples into wrestling. You know, if I go see the Stones, I don't want to see Mick bring, you know, his wife on stage. Or if I go see Metallica, I don't want James Hetfield to bring his, you know, daughter on stage. So that's just me. Never really cared for the family angles in wrestling. But like I said, that's me. I am who I am. I am who I am. Last Man Standing match, Cena versus Bray Wyatt. One of the best Last Man Standings I've ever seen in my life. Even better than the one I had with Triple H back in 2000, which a lot of people say was one of the best Last Man Standings ever. I don't want to sound egotistical. I'm just telling you what the people said. People, don't get on my case. I'm not bragging on my own self, but that was a good match. I really did enjoy it. But this one, this John Cena Bray Wyatt, what a well-worked match. Great spots, great false finishes, lots of plunder. Cena, just every time, outdoing himself. Anybody who says he's not a good worker is stupid. He's a great worker. He's a great performer. He's a great company man. Love John Cena. And love Bray Wyatt. I have for a while now. I championed that gimmick before it even got into the company. I was sold on it from the start. And I love how they kept the Usos involved because it seems like you don't want to forget how much work they've put into those guys lately. They've really come into their own. Maybe that'd be a good Talk is Jericho. Have those guys on together. Maybe I'll try and get that going. But once again, Cena gets the victory. Really didn't matter either way. Cena's still the top guy in the company, so give him the win. Like I said, it wouldn't really hurt him to lose, but it doesn't really hurt Wyatt to lose either because he's going on to bigger and better things. We all know that. You can see that, and it's obvious. Alicia Fox and Paige. Paige still doing good. Alicia Fox, the new star of the Divas division. Such a ridiculous character. Love it. Give that one a thumbs up. And then, of course, the no-holds-barred elimination match, Shield versus Evolution. I was right. The Shield wins 3-0, pins all of the other members of Evolution in succession. This is the last we're going to see of Batista for a while, which is all good. He's going off to do his movie promotion for Guardians of the Galaxy. Lots of other good stuff going on for Big Dave, and he will be welcomed back with open arms. I got a scratchy throat today. I tried a Steve Perry and did not do it. So, did you see Steve Perry when he came back and played with the Eels in Minneapolis? Steve Perry not appearing on stage for like 10 years, ex-Journey singer, came on and sang an Eels song and sang two Journey songs and apparently just showed up. I guess he's a big fan of the Eels and just showed up and said, I'm going to sing today. So, the start of the rumors that Steve Perry will rejoin Journey. Don't know about that. He didn't sound as good as he did back in the old days. But still, Steve Perry singing in this world is a good day for me. I'm a huge Steve Perry fan. One of my biggest influences as a singer, even though I don't sound anything like him, just as a performer and as a singer, I love Steve Perry. Thanks to everybody who came and rocked with us in this last Fozzy tour. We had a great time. And we look forward to seeing all of you again very, very soon. Had some great shows. Atlanta was awesome. Oneonta, New York, Beckley, West Virginia at the fine Munchies. Thanks to Munchies for the great time. Great club, took care of us. The food was great. Hampton Beach, New Hampshire was great. Rock on the Range, Carolina Rebellion. So many great shows. Had a great time with Buck Cherry, awesome rock and roll band. If you get a chance to see them, go do so. And come see Fozzy at Download June 14th on the main stage. And Thursday, June 12th at Leicester Square. And also on Sunday, June 15th. London is Jericho. Go to eventbrite.co.uk if you want to get one of the few remaining tickets or meet and greet tickets to come say hi to me in person. Come see my spoken word question and answer show. I guarantee you're going to love it. It's going to be a blast. Come on down. Check it out. And come on down. Coming up next, I got Bruce Kulick from KISS. But before we get started, just wanted to give another big thank you to you guys for checking out my sponsors. You can find them all in one place. Just go to podcastone.com. That's podcastone.com. And click on the Keep Our Podcasts Free banner at the top of the page. That will take you to Talk is Jericho. And links to all my sponsors, including Amazon. All the Amazon links are on there too, UK, Canada, and USA. So again, please go to podcastone.com, click on the Keep Our Podcast Free banner at the top of the page, then click on Talk is Jericho to find all my great sponsors. Bruce Kulick is coming up, but because you know music is one of my biggest passions, you know you gotta believe me when I say go check out our tunes. It's something I've been listening to lately. It's a streaming music service that blends indie artists with your favorite mainstream artists to create your perfect listening experience. You can easily discover new artists, listen to great music, and get better sound quality than Pandora, so important in this day and age. Our Tunes handcrafts their music selections, so you don't have to worry about some algorithm choosing terrible music for you. How cool is this? Musicians and comedians can sign up for free today and start uploading their music and gain exposure next to mainstream artists. It's the best of both worlds. You guys will receive 3 months of unlimited skips and no ads by signing up at rtunes, spelled with a Z at the end, .com, and using the promo code Jericho50. That's O-U-R-T-U-N-E-Z.com. Use the promo code Jericho50, then simply download the iPhone or Android app for your device and receive another 3 months as a thank you. That's rtunes with a Z.com. Go check it out and do it right now.
My name's Paul Shirley.
And I am Justin Halpern.
Together, we do a podcast called Short Corner.
It is a podcast about the NBA, but it's not the same as every boring podcast you hear about the NBA. Paul, you play in the NBA.
Yeah, three different teams in the NBA, a lot of teams everywhere else. And Justin is a comedy writer. That may not seem like a logical pairing, but together we make magic about the NBA.
So come listen to us and find us at podcastone.com/shortcorner and let us make love to your ears.
Talk is Jericho.
All right, across the table for me right here, a friend of mine for many years and an amazing guitar player, my favorite guitar player in KISTory, Bruce Kulick is here. How you doing, Bruce?
Hey, thank you for that. I know you've been a big supporter of my era of KISS, and it's always been something I can brag to friends about. you carry some strength behind that. You know that.
No, it was a great era all the way through, mm-hmm. and it was really cool to see you. I was just at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame as you were there as well. And I was really kind of, you know, I've done a lot of things, but I'm still a fan at heart. And have half of the Revenge era KISS lineup come and say hi to me. It was really cool, you and Eric Singer.
Every time I'm around those guys, and because, you know, the only one missing really for that Revenge era is me. If I'm there, then there it is. And then people always say things like that. So I appreciate that. It was great to see you.
So it was really cool to see you. And the fact that you were invited to sit at mm-hmm. Paul and Gene's table with Eric and Tommy. It's a pretty cool honor, I would have to say.
Absolutely. I mean, I just wrote about it on my website and Facebook and all, and a nice long blog of what it was like for me, which I got to be real sincere here. I know the Hall of Fame kind of really screwed KISS, okay?
Yeah.
And I get their point that they only wanted the original band, but I just think they were misguided in the fact that as Paul stated many times, the rules are not clear, and they're like their own club and they decide on their own. But soon as that happened, I was happy, and I realized, oh, God, you know, when it was announced, I think it was December last year, actually. And then I'm like, oh, God, how is this going to play out? Are they going to play? What's going to happen? Am I included? Will I be mentioned? Would I get inducted? You know,
yeah.
And I've always kept my expectations kind of low, because it's always been a very – the fans know – But in the big picture, it's a complicated issue. The band's unique, extremely sure. unique, and huge, you know,
right.
and controversial.
Yeah.
And then started the drama. But one of the most important things for me was like seeing just a few days after that, Paul emailing me saying, "Your contributions, you know, may seem like it's being not looked at right now, but I'm going to do my best, to, you know, and I really appreciate it." Because the facts were there, you know, like 10 million records sold in my 12 years and the successful.
There is no doubt in my mind mm-hmm. that you should be in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. There is doubt in my mind. And Eric Carr and Eric Singer and Tommy and Vinnie right. Vincent and Mark yep. St. John. I'll tell you the reason why, because at that ceremony, mm-hmm. E Street Band goes in,
yep.
and it's guys that, like, every member,
yeah.
some guy, you know, that played drums, like, in 1974.
Yeah.
It's total BS, man. Yeah. You guys totally should have been in there. I mean, how did you feel about that? I know you're a very humble guy.
But yeah, I mean, I did feel that way. I didn't have to scream about it, because I got to admit, the headlines seem to always grab the when someone's really throwing someone under the bus a lot. You
yeah.
know, it's not really my style. Yeah, I've been saying some things about the Hall of Fame, but Paul basically has laid it out pretty
yeah.
strongly, and so has Gene. And then Ace and Peter have been playing the, well, you know, it should be just the original band. I get that. You know, they want all the light on them, okay?
Yeah.
But I'm shining here because finally, Kiss has been so successful with Eric and Tommy, and I've seen them, okay?
Yeah.
I saw them in Canada last year because I happened to have been up there with Grand Funk, and it was awesome. I saw the spider stage and the show. You know, I mean, for guys in their, you know, Gene and Paul are in their 60s, it was amazing, okay? Mm-hmm. I loved it. But the fact that the Hall made Kiss, meaning Gene and Paul especially, and then the fans reflect on 40 years, which was always Paul's point. And, of mm-hmm. course, the Hall didn't give a damn about it.
Yeah.
Okay, so then it pushed it even more. And guess who gets the bright light then? Well, there's those years with me and Eric Carr, and then there's years with non-makeup for Eric Singer and myself.
Yeah.
Which I can't tell you how many fans I've met that I'm the first guitar player they saw. I'm on the favorite album for them.
I'm one of them.
Okay, well, thank you.
I'm one of them, yeah.
So you see what I mean? And generally when Kiss is, you know, current in the current mode, which is makeup and with two younger, healthier guys, Tommy and Eric, you know, whenever they're hyping Kiss, they're hyping Kiss and makeup now. That is Kiss now. So the Hall of Fame, with even though the issue, and I could say, well, I was screwed, sure. But the benefit of the discussion and the drama and the and everyone just, well, what's going on with Kiss? Why are they fighting? What's going on? You know what I mean? Even
yeah.
people that don't care about the record, I could finally share with some of my neighbors who knew that I was a musician, but they didn't get, you know, I'd send them one of the Billboard articles about them fighting about and my name being mentioned. So
right.
for me, it's been great in that sense that Kiss trended so high with attention that obviously all of a sudden people knew about me again in a bigger way.
Right.
So that's why I've been taking the high road. For me, maybe even less. I have to say that probably for Tommy and Eric it was a little more awkward because they are in Kiss, okay?
And in the makeup.
Yes, and right. in their makeup, which right. was a criticism, although when the CEO of the Hall of Fame made the mention, well, those guys shouldn't be inducted because, you know, they're just imitating, you know, Ace and Peter, the original guys. Hello. Eric Carr wore someone else's makeup, okay?
Yes.
I was there for 12 years with no makeup.
You never wore makeup, yeah.
You know, you get what I mean? And
yeah.
and then I remember that morning, my blood pressure went through the roof, and I'm emailing Gene and Paul and going, you left yourself open with all the press about Def Leppard Kiss Tour because you're just hyping Tommy and Eric again. I get it.
Mm-hmm.
Of course.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to go do a big, important tour this
yeah,
summer, right?
That's the current lineup.
Yeah. And you left yourself wide open here. Right. Gene responded to me, copied Doc McGee, first time ever. Right. And Paul. And then a couple hours later, I'm not saying I pushed this. I know they would have done this anyway. But I wanted them to know how upset I was because they left themselves open. Of course, Paul was able to come back. These idiots at the Hall of Fame don't know anything. They're not even aware that Eric Carr wore a different makeup. You know, he was there for 10 years.
Yeah.
That we had members that didn't have makeup and were there with success. So,
and sold millions of records.
But
yeah.
again, another headline in the press. You know what I mean? It was hilarious. It kept going back and forth. Every morning I was like, oh my God, I can't believe this. And I bookmark it, send it to my best friends, and, you know, share it with my wife, you know, because she's not on the internet like me.
Right.
And my head was spinning constantly. Now I'm coming down. I mean, the high of being there, I nearly fell off my chair when Gene called me the great Bruce Kulick, okay?
Yeah, that was cool.
And
Tom Morello, you know, mentioned you in the opening speech.
Yeah. And I know Tom's a fan of all your – I watched his tweets, and I remember him talking about, like, I was at the Crazy Nights video. I mean, why would you go to the Crazy Nights recording video, which is a live video,
yeah.
you know, if you weren't a fan? You know
That's
what
right.
I mean? So Tom's a class act. He handled it the way the Hall should have handled it. you know, handled it.
It was almost like, and I mean, I think this is pretty obvious, that the Hall put Kiss in begrudgingly, like, because it was getting to be such a black mark, and like, Kiss has to be in. Right. I mean, it's just like, I mean, Deep Purple and Rush. Purple's not in, Rush is. But it was like they did the absolute minimum that they had to do.
Right.
To put the band in, and that included completely ignoring your era and you know, anybody else's era that wasn't the original four.
Yeah. The rules weren't the same for us, but it didn't matter. The attention was there. But I do agree with you. I think they're trying to brand it as a bigger thing, you know what I mean? And I think last year with Rush and Heart, because I'm friends with Howard Leese, and we talked about a lot of this drama, because, you know, some of other Heart members that were important too were not included last year, and they were part of,
like, really Howard.
Well, no, Howard did get inducted.
Oh, but so like Danny Cromassie and those guys from the '80s, right?
And they were part of very huge selling Kiss. I mean, Heart records.
Right.
You know. Now, granted, they weren't on the cover maybe of the Heart album. I'm not sure. You know what I mean?
But they were in the band though for that huge era.
Absolutely.
Just like Kiss had the '80s era,
and they got screwed. All right. But then again, the Wilson sister. Who knows what politics goes on there? You know, Gene and Paul were really clear that they really wanted this to be broader than just the original four, and then you just have this whole point of selling tickets for an arena. I mean, there we were, the Barclays Center, beautiful place
in Brooklyn.
Yeah, in Brooklyn, it's like Staples Center or something.
That's
like
right.
That. Now, I remember talking to some, I forget who it was. I think it's that producer, manager guy, Andrew. I didn't talk to him. I read this that Andrew Lug Oldham,
yeah, the Stones'
and
first manager,
and he would not go because to him it was supposed to be like at the Waldorf, a private, you know, small dinner, a fun thing, you know, where you. And he was like, it's just a commercial, you know, nonsense,
right? Because he wasn't there, That's
and
right.
You know that what Howard told me was that the Heart Rush induction ceremonies was sold out in advance, and you know, this one they had a paper. Okay.
Did they really?
Yes, because you know that Kiss was not performing.
But, and Nirvana couldn't perform, and so Kiss couldn't. So headliners was Hall & Oates, basically.
Yeah. I mean, but I got to admit that, well, you know, the E Street Band and Bruce Springsteen is going to be something
that's
big,
true,
obviously,
too.
For that area.
Yeah.
But I have to admit, all the entertainment that I did see, and I did take off with the guys because they had an early morning to do TV and stuff. So I left, like, I caught a few songs from the E Street Band with Bruce, which was exciting. But I tell you, all the women that performed regarding Linda Ronstadt, Glenn Frey, Peter Gabriel, I was practically in tears. And he and I made a mention of some of his speech, you know, because I saw it online and I remembered it really moved me about what music, how that brings people together and how important it is, how dangerous it can be, too, because it can make you feel so good. I mean, people are passionate about their music and people are passionate about Kiss. And I know that Kiss fans had to relate. I don't think I could have seen any more debates and intense, you know, reactions from all the fans about the division. You know, look, is it fair to be upset that the band didn't perform? Yeah, but I don't like when they necessarily want to blame Gene and Paul, because they got to understand it was a bigger issue here.
Well, with all the you know, thousands of musicians that have been influenced and love Kiss, do you know why there was no, like, all-star band playing Kiss songs or some kind of representation?
I think it was all played out in the press instead of, like, some really good conversations. Eric Singer definitely told me that Doc, you know, Doc McGee representing Kiss, had reached out to the Hall and probably even Ace and Peter at times. But I know enough about the camps, okay, if you know what I mean. And I'm pretty strategic. I'm an intelligent guy. Me looking at all this, I got to say that the best description I had was, like, it was as if the Hall of Fame presents it to the original four guys and they're all in a room and they throw a bomb in there and then they run, because it was not going to be able to be worked out unless they really handled it with some diplomacy. It should have been everybody up there playing. Oh, like Unplugged, we made that work. That was never an option.
You would have to do it without makeup, I guess.
Right. Because you have that issue. You have a successful, very popular – let me tell you, because Kiss is out there with Tommy and Eric doing an amazing job as Kiss. I'm not going to say that, you know, it's exactly the same as what it was. It wasn't the same as my era. It wasn't the same as the original era. Even Gene gave a shout out to Ace. Nobody could play like Ace. You know what I mean? And as much as Tommy does a great job at kind of playing like Ace, you know.
Yeah.
But the point here is just everyone's going to see Kiss now. Kiss is huge. The ticket sales and the merchandise and the popularity is a given. That's a fact.
Right.
And then they turn on new fans. I mean, I did this thing at Musicians Institute yesterday. No one was over like 20. And they're all wearing Kiss shirts. And they're all like, they know my era too. You know, I'm showing them, you know, God Gave Rock and Roll to You. You know, I'm like, how did I even know this? You know, I'm out of the band since 96. I mean, do the math. 18 years.
Yeah.
Well, what happened? You know what I mean? Well, they're aware of Kiss because Kiss is still an important band. And then because we have the internet and DVDs and YouTube, they can look and go, oh, that's awesome. Wow. Mm-hmm. Oh, I love this Crazy Nights record. Oh, Revenge. That kicks ass. Yeah. You see what I mean? So I shine in this current thing. And that's why to just be looking at what Kiss fuels nowadays in the sense of concerts and marketing and rock music in general, what they mean – you shouldn't diminish that. And the Hall didn't get it, so they just
did. You, I mean, I noticed too that you were at one table with, we said, Tommy and Eric, yeah, and Gene and Paul, and then mm-hmm. Peter was at one table and Ace was at another. Right. Did you see Ace at all? Did you ever really interact with him? This being kind of one of his replacements,
right? This was funny because I don't have an issue with Ace, and I know he doesn't have an issue with me. And I remember,
why would you? Yeah,
yeah. Everybody was at that same hotel, Midtown in New York, and I remember I was talking to the guy who runs Kiss Online. This guy Keith, uh-huh, and works with the band, and we were hanging out and getting ready to, you know, where are the cars, when, you know, who's coming down, you know, is Gene down yet? And I saw Ace just like go out. There was a lot of people that greeted him, and I was almost ready to go over and just say hi, you know, and then he got in the car and he was gone. Mm-hmm. But Peter, I did have interaction. He was literally opposite me on that other table, which was closest to the stage.
Yeah.
My table was right behind that one. Still, like, amazing seats. When they led me out there, I was like, holy.
You were right.
This is amazing.
Yeah.
I love this. And then arm's length at the next table is Bonnie Raitt and Carrie Underwood.
Uh-huh.
So the only time I had the opportunity to actually, you know, greet Peter was, you know, obviously they went up for their induction, they did their speeches, then they were whisked away, which was part of like why Gene and Paul have been like upset about the. No one even knew what they were supposed to do or not do, if you get what I'm saying.
In what way?
Well, I think.
No schedule? Or?
Right, right. No one was told, you know, Kiss is inducted after Peter Gabriel.
Oh,
you get what,
really?
What I mean? No, none of them knew anything. I didn't know. It was all a surprise.
So you guys
to
were just waiting until they called your name?
No, you're there enjoying the evening.
Yeah.
Peter Gabriel was amazing. Well, first they started off with Brian Epstein and
Andrew Lugold. Yeah.
Right. And then they went into Peter Gabriel, which that was a kumbaya moment because he's just one of those kind of artists. How can you not like him? You
right.
Know? And then the next thing you know, the Kiss video appears. Okay, a short. In fact, there was a nice scene of Gene talking from the Revenge era. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It must have been from one of
so
the videos.
So you guys, you know, didn't even know?
No,
they didn't.
Nothing.
Wow.
How about us being let out? They already started that Jan Wenner already.
Yeah.
Why?
Because you saw – I was sitting in the front row,
right,
and my friends and I – my cousin was like, oh, fashionably late. Kiss is showing up fashionably late.
Uh-uh. We were told to go – look, I'm along for the ride. I could always hear my wife's Lisa's voice telling me, just follow their lead.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You know, because
you're excited
all of a sudden,
to be there. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm in the band all of a sudden. But I'm not really in the band.
Right,
but I'm in the band.
You're part of the family.
Right. So Team Kiss, we're leaving in 3 minutes. You know, we're in the green room where I got the great shot with Stevie Van Zandt.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
That was a blast. He's such a sweetheart. And then the next thing I know, we're being let out. Kiss! You know, people are screaming out.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
whatever.
Yeah.
And I'm like, wait a minute. The show started already. Why did they lead us out now? Ace was all the way on the other side. Okay.
Yeah.
Peter was like arm's length to me, so maybe politically the way – well, you know, Gene and Paul should get the seats more like where the camera could get them.
Yeah,
you know, so
of
they
course.
Were on that side of the table. I was on actually the closer to the stage, but I turned my chair around so
right.
I could watch. And the tables were actually very close to each other. You know, it wasn't like a sit-down dinner like maybe what they had at the Waldorf.
It was like at a wedding or something.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But a big one downstairs.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? And you were right on that first row.
That's
where,
right.
Where the
right
stairs
by the glass.
Are. Right,
yeah.
Exactly. Which is how I got to say hi to you.
That's
of
right.
course. But I did, when Peter came back, whatever they did back there, and I don't even know, but obviously that's where that photo was taken of the four of them holding the thing, which I could tell they were all a little awkward because I think in Gene's mind he would have loved the photo with everybody. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
But look, those guys got inducted, they got the awards, they're holding the awards. I didn't even know there was an award to be held. I've never seen one before.
Like an actual, it's like a triangular trophy,
right,
sort of thing.
But it's got a big brass plate with the person's name. Didn't you see them?
Yeah. It looks like winning an Oscar or an American
exactly.
Music Award or
and
something.
And they were trading them off because they were handed the wrong ones, you know, somehow, which I thought was pretty funny. That was a good way to break the ice.
Yeah, that's right.
Wait a minute. You have mine. Give me that.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly.
But they went back there. Apparently, some people did press because I think Ace, I heard from someone in Ace's camp that he did some press there. I don't really know if Gene and Paul did much, you know, but I just know they came back kind of, you know, like, what just happened? You get what I mean? Because
right.
they weren't told. And then on the ride back, I know Gene was like asking questions to Doc and the staff, like, how did that happen? Where
wow.
What was supposed to happen? You get what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But I mean, again, they were there for one reason, of course. And there was no, you got to remember, all the other artists were probably in some way involved with performing.
Yeah.
And Kiss wasn't. So it was an intense 15 minutes. Let me tell you, I had a big sigh of relief afterwards, especially with the shout outs.
I mean, after the awards were given out.
All right. Nobody killed each other. Yeah. No one threw anyone under the bus. There were little, you know, like, you know, Ace made a point because he has a belief about sobriety, you know what I mean? Or being an alcoholic, you know, and having a problem. And I think he knows that Gene doesn't feel the same way. And I'm not going to get in the middle of that debate.
Oh, yeah. But being like, I think he says a disease or something.
Yeah, you're born
like
that way. Yeah, and there are people that feel that way. Right. I'd have to ask some of my smart doctor friends what they think, you know, before I can judge that. But and then Peter, you know, made the Catman. I'm the Catman in
no
or out
what.
Of makeup.
No matter what.
I'm like, oh boy. But but if you think about it, considering the headlines from the previous month.
Well, there was some trash talking going into it too.
So that was all I thought it was very respectable of the 40 years of Kiss, of the fans, of everybody. And everybody lost out with the performance because again, they put a bomb in that room because the rule, and I didn't make that point earlier that I should, the Hall only wanted the original band in makeup.
Hmm.
That didn't even happen at Unplugged.
Right.
And yet that was an amazing moment. Do you know I got more fans from the non-believers from Unplugged? Because people like, and I did get to meet Dimebag, you know, years before, of course, tragically died. But you don't have a bigger Ace fan than that.
Yeah, he has Ace tattooed on his chest.
But people like that actually watched that, and then they realized that the band with Eric and I were credible, okay, because, you know, they were just diehards of the original you know, makeup people. And then, of course, they had their fun to see Ace and then to see all six of us out there. So my offering would have always been a more Unplugged kind of moment for Kiss, but that's not what the Hall wanted. And I get that. They wanted the big...
Because I don't think they knew. I don't think they respect Kiss and was just like, put the four guys in there and forget the rest of the history.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, because when the Red Hot Chili Peppers went in, their original drummer, who I think played on the first EP, I never even knew the guy existed. He's in the Hall of Fame.
There's lots of examples of this, and I thought, you know, I didn't have to talk about it much because Paul, you know, certainly stated the case many times.
And,
And I know, you know, like, it vacillated how Ace and Peter were reacting to all this. You know, in some ways they were like, whatever, you know, oh, it should be only the, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, all I know is lots of drama, lots of attention, and I'm glad I was left out of the kind of any of the trash talk, if you know what I mean.
Right. You kind of came out smelling like a rose
through
the whole thing.
But I will tell you, Chris, and I was talking about this last night to my wife, you know, the pillow talk's always fun. I'm going like, it's really amazing. I got a lot of press from this, don't get me wrong, but I know that since I don't have trash talk, I don't get as much press.
That's right.
As if I had trash
talk. If you would have went out there and did an interview and said, you know, this sucks, and Ace Frehley's an idiot or whatever.
Exactly.
You would be...
not my style.
But that's not you.
I don't need it. No, everyone knows. And look, I'm taking the high road here because, come on, put yourself in my shoes. Suddenly, I can gripe about the fact that my era of Kiss is kind of ignored. I can gripe about that. I have, you know, I know certain fans know, and I know
it's an underrated
era. Right.
Absolutely.
And it shouldn't be, because for some it was their first era and their most important era.
For me,
you know?
I'm one of them.
All right, and thank you. But you get what I'm saying. And so I could have had a weird, but this made everybody at least look at it more.
Mm-hmm.
So I just kind of took that, I'm going to take the back seat here, and now I can share my thoughts, and I still don't really have trash. I mean, I'm upset with the Hall of Fame, but what am I going to say? You know?
People
now know that Kiss has more than just a makeup era.
And I thought it was
years.
You know, I thought it was pretty cool that you were invited to the table, and I could tell you enjoyed it and you appreciate it. And I just finished reading Paul's book, and he described you in it as a mensch.
Yeah, a lot of people don't know what
that
word means.
I had to Google. Actually, my manager's Jewish, and I said, what is a mensch? And he said, you know, a good guy, respectful, respectable, honorable guy.
Yeah.
And I was like, that's pretty cool, man. You're Bruce the mensch.
Yeah. A lot of people now know some Yiddish. And look, I'm of the tribe too, like Paul. I'm Jewish, so it was okay for him to use that. And then, of course, he does mention my problems with my stomach, which I thought was pretty funny too. You know,
that's right, yeah,
and what's really ironic is because I do have some great doctor friends who are guitarists, you know, who know me very well. It's nice to have a doctor, a very bright doctor on speed dial. You know what I mean? And I remember sharing that with them. I said, I guess things haven't changed much. You know what I mean? So I got to laugh at it.
I was laughing too because Paul is really honest in his book. And if there was trash to be talked about, everybody. But that's the best he could do for you is that he had some stomach issues.
Yeah, I didn't really want to hear about Bruce's stomach issues.
It's like, that's all you got?
Yeah. And who cares about a fuzz pedal? You know what I mean? He talks about that because they know I'm a gearhead.
That's right.
I know they always used to make fun of me. And I'm not that bad. I know guys that they won't leave you alone about their equipment.
I mean? You know, big time. So. We're here with Bruce Kulick talking about the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame and his time in Kiss. We're going to get back to the conversation, but first I want to show a little love and affection to my boy Diamond Dallas Page and DDP Yoga. It's a great fitness program, and I say that honestly because I am a user of DDP Yoga, and you know that to be true. I've told you guys dozens of times what DDP Yoga did for me and my career. It got me back in the ring after I injured my back in the ring. I still do DDP Yoga multiple times a week, and believe me, it's great for all people of all ages and all skill levels, and this ain't your mama's yoga either, people! This is a killer workout, good for your heart, easy on your joints, and will definitely improve your strength and flexibility. And because you listen to my show, because you're one of the sexy, beautiful people that listen to Talk is Jericho on a weekly basis, you get a great deal in the DDP Yoga Max Pack. It's 15 workouts. You get a nutrition guide, recipes, and a poster to help you remember the 12 core positions of DDP Yoga. You got to know them. And you can even download the MP3s so you can work out wherever and whenever you want. I do it on the tour bus, in my hotel room, in my house, on a stretch of lawn outside, wherever I want to do it. Don't have to worry about finding a gym. DDP is making it as easy as possible for you to stay in shape and get in shape. So go to ddpyoga.com/Jericho to take advantage of a special offer only available to you. That's ddpyoga.com/Jericho. But this offer is not going to last forever. Go to ddpyoga.com/Jericho and take advantage of it now. ddpyoga.com/Jericho. And you can find this great deal by going to podcast1.com, clicking on the Keep Our Podcast Free banner at the top of the page, then hitting the Talk is Jericho button. Hey, it's Chris Jericho. Is your computer running slow? Well, mycleanpc.com can clean it up and speed it up today. Now you might be asking yourself, how did my computer get this way? It's so frustrating, right? I know. Well, opening infected email attachments, downloading music and games can slow your computer down. Over time, running these programs can cause junk files, internet clutter, processor and hard drive errors to build up in your computer. My Clean PC can help. First, go to mycleanpc.com, and in minutes you can get a free computer diagnosis and find out what's slowing down your computer. Then, simply activate My Clean PC software to clean out the junk, internet clutter, and even remove viruses as well. My Clean PC is guaranteed to increase the speed of your computer. With My Clean PC, there are two easy steps to speed up your computer. First, go to mycleanpc.com and get a free computer diagnosis. Then simply activate My Clean PC software to optimize your computer performance. Go to mycleanpc.com today and find out what's slowing down your computer. That's mycleanpc.com. Go there now.
Daddy, where do babies come from?
Honey?
Mommy went to the store.
Oh, well, you see, there's a mommy and a daddy, right?
Right.
And see, when they call Geico, they could save a bunch of money on car insurance.
Oh, really? And that makes them happy?
Yes, that makes them very happy.
That's good.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad we could have this talk, Sunshine.
Geico, because saving 15% or more on car insurance is always a great answer.
Talk is Jericho.
Here with Bruce Kulick right now, talking about all your time in KISS. Let's talk about when you first joined the band. You know, reading Paul's book, and of course I knew this, what was the state of the band when you first joined, because they were kind of in a rebuilding phase at that point in time.
Right. I mean, I was well aware that, first of all, I knew there was always problems with Ace because of my brother.
Right.
I knew that Vinny, they appreciated the fact that this guy could write some songs, so he got the shot. But then Vinny, of course, wouldn't sign the contract, which is really the way it went. And they had to just move on. I think they were a little reluctant about him anyway.
Did they invite him to the Hall of Fame? He's kind of disappeared now. No one can find him.
Right. They're not on, though. Like I think Gene, and correct me if this doesn't make sense, but I think he's persona non grata.
Gotcha.
You know, however you say that.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Yeah,
that's because
exist.
He sued the band. And
yeah, many times.
That doesn't go over very well usually for people, okay? You know, gripe or not,
right.
When you get the lawyers involved, no one's happy. So anyway, and he lost, and apparently whatever. You know, I called him in Rolling Stone the Howard Hughes of KISS.
That's right.
You know what I mean?
That's
so
right.
That was a big quote. But either way, they I feel like they overreacted. They went to Grover Jackson to find a guitarist. And I think Paul even mentions it in
Grover Jackson,
now,
Jackson, guitar maker.
Yeah, Jackson guitarist. Guitars, and, yeah. And I think he was the starter of Charvel, too, which is an important thing. Yeah. And he had a list of 10 hot L.A. guitar players. And then with the music being Van Halen and shredding. And
that was the kind of the trend at the time. Yes. Yeah, really
that
fast
Paul
playing.
Paul figured, I'm just going to find one of these guys and make him our own. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Which was Mark Norton, which turned into Mark St. John.
Right.
So how weird is this? I remember at my parents' home one time, I got Kerrang. You know that magazine.
Yeah, English magazine. Right.
And there he is on page 24, full spread on, the new Kiss guitarist. And, you know, I'm a little attached to the band because of my brother. Because
Bob auditioned. Right. He played a lot of parts in the studio.
Yeah. I hung out with those guys quite a few times because of my brother's relationship with Paul. I remember driving into the city. We all went to a movie together or go to a club in the city. So I got to see Paul as the regular person, not the rock star.
Yeah, not the star child.
You know, right. And star child. So I remember looking at this in my head going, wrong. I looked at him and it looked odd to me. It just seemed too made up or something.
Manufactured
a bit. And then I read his influences and I'm like, what? You know, he's talking about some – they're great guitar players, but he was talking about some fusion guitar players.
Oh.
And Al Demeo. It might have been I'll think of the name. But
Those type of guys.
Yeah, I was like, wait a minute. If you're not into Jimmy Page and Jimi Hendrix and Eric Clapton and the British invasion of guitar players, how could you play guitar in Kiss? But I get – that was the overreaction that I'm talking about, mm-hmm. you see. And then fatefully, of course, and sadly, he got the gig, did the video, started to do the record of Animalize, rather. You know, Heaven's on Fire was the video that everyone saw him in. But he came down with this health issue, the Reiter's syndrome, that's called R-E-I-T-E-R. It's kind of rare. I didn't know what the hell it was. But,
it's like arthritis or
something?
But
it's like an arthritic thing and your hand blows up. Well, how are you going to play guitar?
Wow.
How weird is that?
Yeah.
I think he was probably – I mean, I don't even know how you create that disease or whatever, but quite honestly, I just think somehow it wasn't meant to be for him, mm-hmm. if you get what I mean. Mm-hmm. This is where fate and you don't know how it operates.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, I get a phone call, which I remember telling the people in my class yesterday, too, about it, that I back in the days of the answering machine, the little mini
cassette player.
Yeah. And I thought it said 0, but it actually said 20, which was the maximum on it.
Uh-huh.
Paul was trying to call me to come in and play guitar on Animalize, you know.
Oh, wow.
So the next morning I see, oh, my God, there's 20 messages. I hear Paul and I call him. I said, I'm really sorry about yesterday, dude. I'm really sorry. You know, hey, you got a guitar with a Floyd Rose, which was the trend then.
Yeah, the tremolo, the whammy bar.
Yeah, the whammy bar that locks, you know. and off I went to the studio, recorded a solo for him, and then he says to me, don't cut your hair. And I'm like, what was that? Hmm. You know, I was used to that role because my brother did it many times with them, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. with being a ghost guitar. Okay?
Right.
And it was nice that they tried me instead of my brother. Okay?
So did you play on Animalize?
Yes.
What song?
Either Murder in High Heels, one of those. I mean,
okay.
I did this as a trick question at a trivia thing recently, and I already forgot.
So it's one of the deep tracks.
Right. It's the last track on, I think, the first side. Okay.
Okay.
And then I did a few other riffs on another one, you know. Mm-hmm. I know some crazy Kiss fan would know this out there. Okay?
I'm sure they do.
Or KissFacts.com has it.
Tweet it to us if you know.
but quite honestly, I didn't know why he said, don't cut your hair. It was about shoulder length at the time. And it turned out that I think he was aware that Mark was not well, and they were not going to wait for him to be well to tour, you know, mm-hmm. and that they had a tour planned. I mean, Lick It Up, they had a hit. They started that climb back up.
Yes.
You know that, because unfortunately between The Elder and Creatures of the Night, even though those records were great in their own ways.
Especially Creatures,
The Creatures tour was a disaster, you know. It did great in Rio and stuff like that when they went to South America.
Yeah.
But America, the Motley Crue was opening for them and kicked their ass. You know that.
Yes.
You know, that was their first tour. So, all of a sudden, I am there. Originally, it was going to be for 2 weeks, turned into 6 weeks. I did the entire European tour. I have some great bootlegs of that, too. And then they wanted to give Mark a shot, you know, and then we were both on the road because they figured,
so you guys are touring together.
Very weird.
Yeah.
And the way I remember it, I'm not sure. Everyone tells it a little differently, and I guess I'd know because it was really like, am I going to – is this going to work? Oh, you pulled up Animalize?
Yeah, I'm looking to see the track listing.
Lonely
as the Hunter is the last song.
Lonely as the Hunter. That's it.
Is that the one?
That's it. Yeah.
Okay.
And I did a couple of riffs. Thank you. And I did a couple of riffs on the other song, just a few at the end.
A Murder on High Heels.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. So thank you so much. And I know – I remember when I was in England, and that was like on the B-side of one of the maxi singles.
Right.
I was like, I'm on this. Because I didn't know if I would be in Kiss.
Uh-huh.
You get what I mean? To me, I was like out of my mind thrilled to just be in the band 2 weeks, even if that's all it turned out to be. You know, I mean, to me, that was like Jimmy Nichols, you know, sitting in with the Beatles.
Okay? Yeah.
You know what I mean?
For one tour, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So anyway, as it turned out...
How was it being on the road with Mark when he knows, like, this is the guy who's going to replace me?
Talk about taking the high road and seeing things. I didn't want it to be the Nancy Kerrigan, you know...
Take a steel pipe.
Yeah. And do... What was her name?
You know, Tonya Harding.
Yeah, Tonya Harding.
Yeah.
I looked at it like, hey, this guitar player's out on the road. All right. I know I'm better for the job. Hey, you want to warm up a little bit? Let's jam. Mm-hmm. We were jamming backstage. I had to take the high road. I took it totally like, because Gene and Paul were obviously honoring the contract or whatever and going to give him a fair shot. Okay. And you got to respect him for that. Because I knew already when Gene would say things, good job tonight. You know, I knew I had the home team advantage. You know what I mean?
Right.
So, you know, I did a half of a show once. And then Mark came in for the other half, and then
half and half.
Isn't that weird? Yes,
wow.
I was all suited up. It wasn't makeup, really. I mean, we wore makeup back then, but you know,
yeah, of course,
it wasn't the kabuki thing.
Eyeliner,
and I'm all dressed up and ready. Yeah. And then they let him do a whole show, and I sent him home.
Mm.
That was it. And then the next day, I was asked to join the band, you know, officially, and given a concert, a contract. I think I signed the contract the night we did. It was Detroit, and we did the Animalize.
Animalize.
Animalize video.
Famous. It's on YouTube now. You can just watch it. It's a great mid-80s kiss.
12 years of that. That was crazy.
So when they signed you to a contract, were you on like a retainer, a year-round thing?
Yeah, with those guys, it was easier. I always joked with my friends that it was like, well, I'm paid well when I'm working, and I'm overpaid when I'm not working. You know what I mean? Because, you know, it was nice to get a weekly salary. For a musician, that's very unusual.
Oh, absolutely.
You know?
But reading Paul's book, and I've often thought about this and kind of knew it, but to hear him say it was how, you know, he basically took the reins in the 80s because Gene was persona non grata.
Right.
How was that recording records? Was Gene ever around?
No, he was. It's just Gene, you know, Gene's a workaholic. You know him well enough to know that. He doesn't believe in a day off or anything. So everything's business, business, business. And he had his eyesight. Let's face it. I mean, Kiss reached certain heights, and then I think he got that feeling when it was faltering, and then they took the makeup off, which made him probably he lost that demon thing.
Yeah.
Even though there were certain times like Revenge and even the Hot in Shade, Gene looked tough.
That was later,
cool.
But at that time Paul still looked like Paul.
Oh yeah,
but Gene looked like he would say Phyllis Diller in
drag. Especially Asylum tour. He was very lost. But you know, knowing that he got into this character of the demon really from the horror movie movies and things like that.
Yeah.
And he knows how to brand himself. Absolutely. Gene is, you know, he copyrights the money bag and, you know, you know, and the dollar sign and whatever.
The devil horns.
Yeah, yeah, everything. So I think he wanted to be a movie star, you know, get into Hollywood. He moves to Hollywood. He meets Shannon. Then he's living with Shannon. And I think his focus was... I know that we were all cynical. It's hard to make the jump from different things. You're unique to go from your wrestling fame to musician
to music,
too. Right. But any musician, you know, a lot of the TV people, they're great at music. Some of them in the movie people, and they put out records and nobody cares. You know that.
Mm-hmm.
Yet they can have a huge hit box office thing, and the reverse is true too.
Yeah,
very hard to do that.
Right.
So his attention was a bit divided. Although again, because Gene's a workaholic, but Paul had no interest in that. And he was at the helm, you know.
Did you play? And obviously, you played the solos. Did you play rhythms on the records too?
Yeah, it all depended. Like Asylum, certain songs, especially Paul's songs. You know, if he kind of wrote the song, he probably wanted to play the rhythms. And I didn't always play. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'd have to really like look back and listen back.
Sure, sure.
But Asylum was very exciting because that was the first one where I was really a member of the band now, and now I'm going to record with them. I sound New York from my trip. Huh? What was ironic though was. Because Paul wanted a little bit like the weekends off or whatever, and Gene doesn't believe in a day off. So I remember having 21 days in a row in the studio.
Wow.
Being passed between the two of them. But, you know, look, I'm an Electric Ladyland. I'm the biggest Hendrix fan in the world. And there I am at that studio recording Kiss.
I mean,
I'm not going to complain. You know what I mean? For me, my life changed in a wonderful way.
Did you play bass on some of those records too?
Not Asylum, not that early period. That started to happen, not even, I don't think, Crazy Nights. Hot in the Shade, and then during the Revenge album, Ezrin knew, like, you play it, you know, because we kept changing the keys on some of the songs. If I did the demo with Paul, he loved what I did. I even played bass on some of Psycho Circus. It was
really
exciting. Yes.
Wow.
Yeah.
So Gene had no problem with that?
No, not at all. I mean, they looked at it like... you know that the Beatles sometimes Paul's playing drums on a track.
Paul played lead guitar in Taxman.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. So they looked at it like that. And for me, obviously, I put the Gene attitude in my fingers, you know, of playing using his bass, and you know what I'm saying. So
yeah, of course.
Those tracks, the demo when I did Psycho Circus. Now I'm not even in the band anymore, but I was friends with the co-writer, you know, that I worked with, Kurt, that wrote the song with Paul, and that's how I kind of got a co-write too on Psycho Circus too, because I was around trying to help out. Okay, it was called Dreaming. Wound up with a lawsuit, but that was another story. But anyway, it was just easy. I played the bass on the demo, and I think most of the Paul songs on that record I played bass on.
Yeah, I think like you said, whatever's best for the tune, and if you have, you know, the vibe of it, and you know, you kind of played with Gene many years, so I'm sure you kind of can guess what he would play.
And trust me, on a song like Jungle that I wrote the majority of the riffs on with Paul and this guy Kurt Cuomo, it was me playing the bass. And that was the single from that album, which is great.
That was from Carnival Souls.
And that's actually going to be on one of the exciting things we didn't touch upon today was not only the Hall of Fame everybody talking about 40 years is now, because Kiss is back with Universal, you know, Monster came out through something with Universal, they're cataloged as the huge vinyl rollout.
Right.
And there'll be a CDs with songs from every album. And usually my era is never too much reissued in any way.
Yeah.
You know? So now my legend lives on. You know?
Let's talk about, you mentioned Jungle. That was from Carnival of Souls record, which is kind of like you mentioned your era being forgotten. That album is forgotten completely. This was the record that you recorded right as the reunion talks were happening. What tell us about, like, how was that? How was that whole time period? It must have been a little bit confusing for you.
You picked up a good subject. All right, let's know that after Revenge, obviously the band kept writing. No, Revenge wasn't as big as the band wanted, but it was a great record. And God Gave was real important for us, too, with the movie, with the Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey. But we were writing. We were always writing. In fact, like the song Within came up out of the demos for Carnival Souls, which, of course, wound up on Psycho Circus.
Okay?
And my backwards guitar parts was flown over, which, yes, I was paid for it. Okay, everybody, don't worry. I didn't give it to them. But, yeah, we're busy demoing and looking
doing the,
at...
Doing the follow-up to Revenge.
And seeing how the music business is getting darker and heavier and grungier and detuning, right? Mm-hmm, I mean, you're talking about 93, 94.
Yeah.
Okay.
And now the Soundgarden era was in
full
force.
It's 95, and all of a sudden Gene realizes and Paul agrees, let's do these convention tours, right? Mm-hmm. So then there's a sidestep into what became Unplugged. Why was Unplugged, there? Because it was really cool what we were doing.
You guys were doing the conventions and playing acoustic sets during the Kiss conventions.
And they came out and they saw that. Alex Coletti, the guy, big Kiss fan.
MTV,
you know,
guys.
Exactly. And he says, like, you're going to do this. Now, I'm unaware that when they booked, and why I have to talk about Carnival Souls is to explain, I need to explain first Unplugged to talk about Carnival Souls. So next thing you know, there we are. They insisted on bringing Ace and Peter into the fold for that. So they figured out politically the best way to do that. Obviously, that opened the door for possible reunions. In fact, Ace and Peter didn't want to do it unless they maybe can be guaranteed a reunion. So there was all this stuff that I'm unaware of, but there's all this maneuvering by all these camps about they didn't show up at rehearsal. Why?
Wow.
Well, there was something going on about that. But look, it came out amazing.
Did you rehearse those tunes?
Yeah, we went to SRR, and then eventually they did come. Okay?
Did you have to work with Ace?
Yes, it was fun. It was cool.
But did you have to like show him some parts?
No. He was ready. He brought an Epiphone. He was endorsed by Gibson with Epiphone then.
Gotcha.
And he had an acoustic with him. I had an extra pedal from a company in New York that I dug, Tech 21, with this acoustic pedal. Step on that, Ace, for the solo. You know what I mean? It'll boost
your levels.
They were strict with us, MTV. They made us play acoustics, okay? I had to go play an Ovation instead of the Chet Atkins, which is kind of acoustic, but it didn't have a real hot sound hole. So they were slapping us for that. But, you know, I made it work. So, all right, we do that. It's big. Now we're done with that performance. We filmed it in August in New York, and it was going to be shown on Halloween. Now, we know Toby Wright's going to co-produce the record. Okay, he has the songs. We've done tons of demos. I've been working with Paul. I've been working with Gene. I've been working with Eric. I worked on I Walk Alone forever.
You know, that was your tune.
Yeah, but no, it was with Gene, and I was kept demoing it and redoing it and trying it, and we were fixing it, and I had all these crazy backwards ideas for it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I was flipping tapes and just getting like a mad professor with it. And then the only reason why Toby heard me singing it is because Gene never got to that point where he sang the demo. The last version we had of it mm-hmm. was with my voice as a guide, really,
yeah.
just to show what the song was about. And that's when Toby came up with the idea saying, Bruce, sing it. But I don't want to sidetrack. Here's the point. I don't know why we're not recording. All of a sudden, there's this like lull. Okay, there's like we did Unplugged. The movies, I mean, the TV show is going to go on the air, right? You know, for what we did. And I'm like, why aren't we recording? I called Gene one day, and it was just like, when are we going to start the record? Okay, right back to you. You know, and about 2 hours later, he calls me, Music Grinder. You know. In other words, he booked it.
Oh, now, okay, the studio. Yeah.
I swear, Chris, it was like if I didn't remind them that Polygram or Universal, whatever it was called then, you know,
had a record.
Was expecting a record that we kind of started because we did do one. I know the game. What you do is you do a track,
mm-hmm.
then they have to give you half the advance,
mm-hmm.
and then upon a completion, they give you the other half.
Right.
Now, again, I'm not involved with that money, you know, but they pay me a salary, the band, so obviously they get the money.
Yeah,
I knew they owed them a record. We're going into the studio. It was they were stalling because they were so distracted with the reunion tour and setting it up and all the politics and getting it done.
And did you know that there was a reunion? Okay.
No. But now, later on, when they finally told us, which was about three quarters through the record, that they invited, Gene. We had a meeting up at Gene's guest house.
So they call a meeting.
Right, with Eric
with you and
myself,
Eric Singer. Yeah.
Say, like, look, this is the deal. And then everything came to my mind. I understood the hesitation, the stalling, some of their distractions during the record.
What did they say to you guys?
Well, they basically said, look, no one's getting any younger, especially Ace and Peter, and we have these strong offers to do a big tour. We don't, it may only last a year, it may last a month, we don't know, but we need you guys to know that, and we're going to take care of you guys for a year, so you don't have to stress.
Oh, so they kept you on salary for a year?
Yes.
Oh, wow.
So it was as if I was in the band that year when I wasn't doing anything, you know. And they probably told us very early in 96, okay, but we still needed to finish the record. That was a little awkward,
yeah.
I gotta admit. You know?
Talking about a lame duck, right?
Yeah, I could tell their attention. Now Paul's trying on his boots in the studio, but now the cat's out of the bag, so it's okay, you know. Mm-hmm. And look, I never faulted them for it. I think Eric Singer was more in denial about it than me.
Mm-hmm.
Because I always felt like, look, you know, like Star Wars, these things come around, you know? I mean, and sometimes you got to grab that moment. Otherwise, it's that opportunity, you know? And which is why currently, if anyone ever thought that they would once again reunite and go off and make up and tour with Ace and Peter, I knew that was not going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
No way.
Mm-hmm.
There's just no way. There's just... no need for it. Too much. It would. It's just wrong.
Did you ever think like when they finally did get rid of Ace and Peter, but decided to keep the makeup on, and they bring in Eric Singer? Did you ever think? I wonder. Like, did you ever think that they would call you to come in and play Ace? And
another great question. Okay, you know this band too well in my history. Let me tell you, I was very aware because again, I'm close to the Kiss camp. I got friends at work, and I know, and I knew about. Ace, you know, like being a real wild card during a lot of a very successful tour, and he was being paid an extreme amount of money,
right.
As far as most musicians know, and for him to even in any shape or form go like, I don't know if I want to show up tonight, is just mind-boggling to me.
Right,
that I got to say. Okay, you got this gift of playing guitar. People want to hear you. You're in Kiss. You're an icon. Shut up and play already.
Yeah.
and stop with the like.
Especially getting a second chance to do this.
I'm like, that I'll never know. I mean, I can't live a day in Ace's shoes to know like why it was so hard to work with that situation.
Yeah.
But Tommy was the perfect guy as a tour manager, and I don't agree with Ace calling Tommy a tour manager. That's a cheap shot.
He played music, played guitar for 30
absolutely.
Years.
Absolutely. And he's a not only a bright guy, a talented guitar player.
Mm-hmm.
So there he is, like the understudy, ready to go.
In the
smartly.
Fold, right.
Yeah, in the fold there. And then all of a sudden, sure enough, it happened.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't at a big concert, though. It almost happened at a concert. I was aware of that.
Yeah.
But where he just saunters in real late, you know what I mean?
Like 10 minutes before showtime.
Yeah, yeah. And hi, you know, whatever. but the point, yeah, exactly. But the point is once that there were some other things like a private gig,
yeah,
all bands do these kind of things. And it was like he didn't want to do it. So Tommy.
Tommy was there.
Now, I'm aware of this, and I'm thinking, I got this good gig with Graham Funk, which is now my
it's your band.
14th year now as a lead guitarist. But I'm going like, would I feel comfortable as the spaceman and put that on and then have to maybe not play the way I play and play
because you always change the solos up a bit, like not in a bad way. You added your own. You Kulik-ized it.
Yeah, well, thank you. That's
for the Ace tunes, you know?
I felt that I showed respect for the important signature riffs. I always do that because I know that's important for a song. I know Vinnie Vincent didn't.
Yeah.
But if Gene and Paul didn't tell him otherwise, then you go and
right,
run with
right,
it.
Right.
But honestly, I always had respect for the important riffs. And like even if we did a song like She, I did want to capture it. But there were other ones where I took some liberties.
Mm-hmm.
But again, I didn't have to move like anybody in particular. I just had to do my thing. My era was unique to that, which forged, I waved the flag for the non-makeup era. So I think it's easier for Eric to go from the 5 years that he was in the band behind a drum kit to them to suit up as the Cat Man.
Mm-hmm.
And he's a tremendous drummer, I have to tell you.
Absolutely.
And it's not as an upfront, guy upfront interacting, because, Tommy's doing, he's up there with Gene and Paul. And obviously, for some fans, it's no issue at all. And then for the diehards,
right, he's in the front line.
Yeah. But it would have been really hard for me. Now, I miss being in Kiss. Don't get me wrong. Mm-hmm. And I got a nice taste of it last week in New York. And I'm like, I miss this, and I understand those guys' music, and I play great in them. But at the cost of becoming the spaceman, I'm kind of actually relieved it actually didn't happen. Though, unfortunately, it means I couldn't be in Kiss all these years. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Let's talk a little bit about Eric Carr. There was something in Paul's book, and it was really interesting to me, talking about when Eric passed away, that he feels very regretful.
Yes.
That I should have known better.
Mm-hmm.
I guess they're talking about mentally. About, I guess, cutting Eric off out of the band or whatever it was. He feels bad. How was that around that time frame from your end when Eric started getting sick? I mean, obviously, great guy. I'm sure that if Paul and Gene are together on one end, you and Eric were together on the other end as the new guys.
Yeah, I was very tight with Eric Carr. I had a song on that second Union album, that I sang called Dear Friend, which kind of tells the story poetically. It was really very, very hard for everybody.
Yeah.
Gene and Paul were running a business. Larry Mazer was the manager, and they were moving on. I know there was a lot of, like, what do we do here?
Eric is sick.
Yeah, Eric finds cancer of the heart, which you don't want that. Okay.
Yeah, there's no.
I had doctor friends back then too, and it was like this radiologist that I remember I was close with at the time. He goes like, "That's like not even a 5%,
rate to
survive for that." And Paul knew that too. Okay, but there were certain now when it comes to like contractually, or there were a lot of rumors going around about like. There's no way they dropped his insurance. There's no way. I don't even think it's like possible. Okay. And why would they do that? But that was one of the rumors. Okay. And then there was the time when they wanted him to kind of sign some paperwork. And all, I have to look at it all as like, I don't know. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I think what Paul is probably referring to, it would have been great for Eric to always know that. Just get well. You're the drummer of the band.
No matter what.
But we're auditioning people. We're moving on. We're recording Revenge.
Mm-hmm.
We're looking for a guy to be the drummer, basically.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And it was easy for Eric Singer because he had worked with Paul before. And it was really true. I remember reading it in Paul's book too. And I'll never forget it that Eric used to say when he met Eric Singer at Paul's solo tour concert, this is the guy that's going to replace me in Kiss. Why would Eric even say something like that? Why would he even think he'd have to be replaced?
Mm-hmm.
Those are weird, fateful, weird things. Well, that was not much different than me looking at the Mark St. John photo. Not quite as heavy.
Sure.
But I looked at that photo and said, this is wrong. Why did I have such a gut reaction to that? So apparently Eric Carr had some instinctual, like, if I'm not in the band, this is the drummer. And he was. I mean, Eric Singer was the right choice. So I just think, emotionally speaking, because a lot of business was involved and there was a lot of emotions. I'm very close with Loretta, Eric's sister.
Eric's sister, yeah.
And man, she's a wild card.
I know.
She's a wonderful girl. She's really protects Eric's legacy.
Mm-hmm.
And the family was, everybody was upside down. It was crazy during his
Did you
illness.
Talk to Eric during that time a lot? When he was ill?
He was very, I never did visit him in the hospital. Mm-hmm. He actually told me, don't take the trip out here just to see me. I'm fine. Obviously, after his operation, the first time they looked in there and took care of this tumor, he was at my house. I have these photos of him. He's got a freaking huge scar, And then he was the guy in the rental car who picked me up to go do God Gave Rock and Roll video.
Okay. Because he had already had surgery, yet he still
showed
the video.
And now he was being treated to be sure the cancer doesn't come back. But the problem is that cancer on your heart is just like something that obviously does, you know, it just can travel. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
whatever.
Yeah.
And then he winds up with a hemorrhage or something, a brain thing. By then, the family really kept him cut off from everybody.
Mm-hmm.
So I just felt like Paul was more referring to the fact that it was probably – it would have been nice to not have so much negative drama mm-hmm. about it, and that everybody be like, just get well, dude, and everything's fine. And again, I'm not really knowledgeable because I didn't own the band to know like, what was being said to him that way,
right.
You know, contractually or just business-wise, you know. But it meant a lot for me, and Loretta knows too, that by Paul coming to that conclusion and having those words means that he's aware that it could have been, like I always used to say, it could have been handled better. But there's nothing I could have done about
it. And it's interesting, like you said, it's interesting that Paul actually admitted that. I thought it was pretty pretty honorable for him to say that, you know.
And then there was this whole drama in the press recently too, because there is someone mentioned, I'll keep him unnamed, actually, in the will that was suing Kiss, but
It
look like Eric Carr's family was suing Kiss.
That's right.
He's not the family.
Yeah.
The report was wrong. He wasn't technically suing. He was suing for
royalties.
It was Discovery, technically, which the papers can pick up, and the Post ran with this, and Mark Abatista, my lawyer, too, got involved. Loretta's calling me at, like, I'm up early, 7:30 in the morning, Bruce, what do I do? People want to comment from me. I said, you're going to shut up and not say anything, and you're going to talk to a lawyer because you don't know what you're walking into here.
Yeah.
And then in the end, I remember Gene was tweeting things, shameful. No, Gene didn't have the facts right. And I'm emailing Gene and Paul and telling them, look, I know who this is because
mm-hmm.
I'm in the will. So I have a copy of the will.
Oh, wow. Right? Okay.
This isn't Eric's family suing for royalties, you know. This was a mess Eric Carr left behind, you know. And it will be dealt with. And then all of a sudden, you know, their lawyer tells Gene back, you know.
Gag order.
It isn't Eric's family. Stop it. Because Loretta called them.
Mm-hmm.
And then the next thing you know, Paul's tweeting very kindly, you know, we're going to get to the bottom of this. This is not Eric Carr's family, you know. And it's shameful, you know, that way.
Yeah,
you
that
know,
part.
I mean, turning it around, you know. And I'm like, phew. You know what I mean? And that went on for a couple of days. I mean, I'm telling you, my Kiss world. I
never
like,
ends, dude.
No, it doesn't. I always like to say, you know, it's just a Kiss world, and we all live in it. And and I've never been living in it so intensely as the last, you know. Well, since the induction was announced in December, and I had this amazing wedding in January to my lovely bride Lisa, and they were there.
And then that
shot of the four of us, Lisa and I with Gene and Paul, was priceless. And then you know, the fact that the cantor who did the ceremony for us. You know, it's traditional that you do talk to whoever's going to do the you know ceremony for you. So he tells the story, and it's really true. I mean, Lisa first went in full rock, you know, like gear, you know, sexy outfit and everything to meet Kiss, and she gets pulled out to meet the band in '86, you know, for the Asylum tour, and she's there to see Paul Stanley, not me.
Yeah,
you know, Eric. She had a little interaction with Eric, and he introduced her to me, and I was always very nervous back there at any of those. No matter, it didn't matter, you know, and especially if you were pretty, and she was gorgeous, you know. So I was like freaking out, and the next thing you know, Paul had a little chat with her, and so the cantor's doing the ceremony, you know, and he's going, and Lisa, you know, you actually met Bruce another time back in 1986, but you were not there to see, you know, your husband to be. You were there to see Paul Stanley. And then it's so funny because we're facing each other. She's actually got the view of Paul's table with Gene and Eric.
Yeah.
And I'm looking the other way, and her face is like and Paul apparently was throwing kisses. You know, it was such a funny shout out, you know, and it was so cool to see that and to see something go full circle at a wedding. And I remember I was so grateful for those guys for coming, because I know with people that you know are kind of busy
schedules.
And famous and scheduled, are you going to make it there? And they were like, oh, we wouldn't miss this for anything, you know. And that was so sweet, you know. It meant a lot.
They got a lot of respect for what you did and the work that you did, and you know, you're doing so much stuff. You mentioned Grand Funk, you're still touring with them in the summer. always playing with them. Mm-hmm. Great gig.
And another band, no Hall of Fame.
That's right. There's so many. I mean, yes. But that one definitely. Yeah. I mean, for sure. Now, and also too, you were talking about your solo record BK3,
right,
which came out a couple of years ago. Now yeah. It's finally getting to go up on iTunes.
Yes, I'm getting that going. And I'm really happy you brought that up. 2010 is when I put out my solo mm-hmm. record BK3, which featured Gene and Eric's on there. Eric Serengera.
There's a lot of great tunes.
I had his son Nick sing a song, which was like kind of like him getting on my dime, shall I say. He learned what it was to be in the studio and be produced, yeah. You know, along with my producer Jeremy. How funny was that? You know,
yeah.
I booked Henson's studio and we did the song with Gene, you know, which is the old A&M studio. Anyway. I had a regular record deal. I licensed it to the same label that put out Ace's Anomaly, you know, mm-hmm. And it did pretty well. But that label had a lot of problems. You know, the music industry is like in shambles.
Right.
Okay. So once the label kind of like, disbanded, I was able to get the rights back to the album because mm-hmm. it was up on iTunes at a certain time. And I've been waiting, and my schedule is crazy with all the hats I wear, you know, to do this and this and this and this, okay? But I finally finished two really exciting things that I could add to the re-release, okay? So I want it up there because I want to be able to – people can, you know, sample it.
Well, in this day and age, if you're not on iTunes, you almost don't exist.
Because then you won't be really with Spotify and the other streaming things.
Yeah.
So it's going up there. There's a remix done by this really talented DJ named Chufu, mm-hmm. who did a really cool heavy version of a dance remix of Ain't Gonna Die, the song that Gene sings. And then there was one other really awesome Beatle-y kind of song that just never got finished. I didn't mm-hmm. know who should sing it, and it didn't fit on the record at the time, that a dear friend of mine who I've recorded with, this talented guy, Andrew London, who I've mentioned on my Facebook page, and he was at my wedding. He performed a couple mm-hmm. of songs there. He sang it, and just going in the studio again and revisiting anything from that album was a real treat, you know. But it was wonderful. It's a long day, but it's all going to be up there.
When do you think you're going to get it up there?
This month.
All right. Good. Perfect. 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 Last question for you, Bruce. A two-prong question. What was your favorite song from that 80s era Kiss, if you had to pick just one or two?
My era, right?
Yeah. From
I always like to say there were like kind of highlights. I mean, I'll go in order of, you know, Tears Are Falling mm-hmm. from Asylum.
Great real solo.
Important. Yeah. I get asked a lot about Who Wants to Be Lonely, which I like to do live. In fact, yesterday at the school, they were like, can you show me the solo?
That's a forgotten tune. That's a great tune.
Really cool song. Yeah. I like performing that one. And then when, you know, like Crazy Nights, I mean, that was huge in England.
Yeah.
And I got to do like my BK Eddie Van Halen thing in that song.
That's right.
It was great. Hot in the Shade had Forever,
mm-hmm.
which I mean,
another tremendous solo.
Yeah. And I always tell the story, especially at the school, for, you know, with the music kids, how, you know, you have to have a really you got to have an open mind, you know, when you're recording, because I thought I'd play like the melody on the electric guitar. Mm-hmm. And Paul said, I hear an acoustic solo. Mm. You know, I was like, whoa. And by the time he goes to, remember Tower Records? By the time he took his Porsche to Tower Records to get a Zeppelin thing to show me what he meant, you couldn't go just online.
That's
and play
right.
Something
that's right.
Like that. I already kind of had most of the solo ideas down. And there's that solo from Forever, which who would think it would be a song from, you know, weddings and things, you know.
Yes.
And it was me who got Paul to meet, you know, and work with Michael Bolton, because Michael was real serious about it. He was such a big writer at the time. Mm-hmm. You know, it was like time for him to write the power ballad of Kiss, right? And then when you get to Revenge, God, I mean, you know, I love Unholy and
great
and then God Gave Rock and Roll is the other anthem I mm-hmm. think that belongs really tied tightly to Kiss. Well, I know when I do live gigs, I'll do Rock and Roll all night, but I always try to have an opportunity to play God Gave Rock and Roll, because that was the more.
And what about from the 70s Kiss that you guys used to like to play live?
Oh, I mean, you know, it's interesting because, did I want to play Love Gun? I was a little tired about Love Gun. You know what I mean? Even though I could shine on it, you know, but I thought some of the most challenging songs were like things like Parasite was really cool, fast and killer mm-hmm. riff. She, wow. You know,
and you only started playing that in the later years in the band too.
But that was great for me. You know, where Eric knew every song from Kiss. So I mean, at the Unplugged things, he could play along, and I'm like, what's that? What's Love Theme for Kiss? You know, when they would break into that, Chris, I'm like, what? You know, what is that?
It's not a song,
right? Right. And sure enough, it barely was on that.
That's
album,
right.
You know
what
I mean? And I guess like 100,000 Years. I was just talking about that one. Ace played some amazing stuff. You know, and oddly enough, even though Kiss always does Let Me Go Rock and Roll, I don't think I ever played that with the band. Although we did I Want You. That was another later one. I mean, here's that band that a lot of people didn't think had great songs. You know, unfortunately, on the radio, you'll hear Shout It Out Loud. You'll hear, of course, Rock and Roll Night. Yeah. Can't get away from it. And occasionally, you'll Lick It Up or something
like
that. Yeah,
or like I Was Made for Loving You.
Yeah, or I Was Made for Loving You. But really, sadly, the catalog for Kiss, I think, is tremendous.
I agree.
And as much as they were the original, like four-piece rock band, garage band, really, which is why they influence people like Nirvana,
yeah,
and bands like that, mm-hmm, the Seattle people too. I think anyone that didn't take a lot of that stuff seriously as musicians, yeah, they knew they weren't Led Zeppelin, so they figured out a way to be noticed and,
that's right,
and successfully. But by the time you had Eric and I in the band, or now with Eric and Tommy, I mean, they could really play anything. Mm-hmm, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And I know Gene never likes to think of himself as a musician, which is funny.
He's a great
bass player.
He's a great singer.
He just
too.
Doesn't care. And a singer, yeah. And those guys harmonize so magically together. So, and when I've done the Rock and Roll Fantasy Camp, which I'm proudly a part of, I got to jam with my heroes too,
like
Jack Bruce and Roger Daltrey. Honestly, when you take apart the songs and teach a band, even if it's something simple like Do You Love Me, it's great stuff. This band deserved the 40 years to be in the Hall of Fame.
That's right.
But it's just such an amazing history with this band. And I think it's just one of those bands that will never be forgotten, just like Led Zeppelin and the Beatles and stuff like that.
I agree.
And
you were a big part of it. And it was, like I said, in my mind, you're in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. It was great to see you there. BK3 on iTunes. Check it out. Bruce's guitar playing is always great. And it's great having you in the studio, my friend.
Thanks, man. I mean, your site, your blog, everyone loves you. And follow me on Facebook and Twitter and all that. We'll keep in touch.
Absolutely.
This is great.
Hey, have you guys entered the latest contest at DraftKings.com? You do not want to miss out on this one. I think this is the reason why DraftKings is America's favorite one-day fantasy baseball site. They're awarding over $3 million in cash prizes with $1 million for first place, and you can score free entry. Just enter Y2J at DraftKings.com for your free shot at hundreds, thousands, even $1 million. Wow, that's a lot of dinero. DraftKings.com is fun and easy. No long-term commitments. No being stuck with the same lineup. Just instant cash every day. So go to DraftKings.com now and enter Y2J for your free entry. That's DraftKings.com. All right, so you know I love to read. I'm really into autobiographies right now. Just finished Asa Akira's. She is the porn legend, going to be a future guest right here on Talk is Jericho. But it's not always possible for me to sit down, pick up a book, and read it. That's why I love Audible.com. I can listen to books. Audible.com has a library of over 150,000 audiobooks. It's a leading provider of premium digital spoken audio information and entertainment on the internet. If you want to listen to it, Audible.com has it. You can purchase individual books, or you can sign up for an Audible listener program, which gives you book credits each month for a low monthly fee. You download the book, then you access it on your PC, or upload it on your smartphone, your tablet, your other MP3 device, and bingo, whammo, blammo, you got a book to listen to. Audible.com is quick, easy, fun, and affordable entertainment for people of all ages. Like I said, they've got over 150,000 titles and almost every genre you can think of. So right now, go check it out for free. You get a free audiobook and a 30-day trial by signing up at audiblepodcast.com/Jericho. That's audiblepodcast.com/Jericho. Go to audiblepodcast.com/Jericho for your free audiobook and free 30-day trial. Do it right now.
Talk is Jericho.
Thanks for listening to my show, and thanks to Bruce Kulick for being here. Such a great guy. Great interview as always. And thanks to you for using my Amazon link every time you do your online shopping. Really easy to find. Just go to podcastone.com. Click on the Keep Our Podcasts Free banner at the top of the page. Then click on Talk is Jericho. You'll see all three of my Amazon links, UK, Canada, and everybody's going Amazon. Amazon USA. Every time you do that, Amazon kicks back a little cash to the show so we can keep doing this for you for free for twice a week. No extra fees or hidden charges. You're just getting your shopping done and helping me out in the process. Do you want to check out the new Fozzy record? You can pre-order it right now and do it through Amazon. It's called Do You Want to Start a War? You've heard Lights Go Out. If you pre-order Do You Want to Start a War now, you'll also get One Crazed Anarchist now. You don't have to worry until July 22nd or wait until July 22nd to hear it. You can hear it now if you pre-order it. I'm going to play it for you now as a little sample, a little bit of good faith. New Fozzy, One Crazed Anarchist, right here on Talk is Jericho. Crank it up.
anarchist. Quiet case anarchist. Quiet case anarchist. Quiet case anarchist.
One crazed anarchist is rolling the dice, a blade in his pocket and he's ready to slice. Bullets in the chamber and his targets are picked. Sides on the danger and his quarry is hit.
What'd you think? Let us know on the Twitter at Talk is Jericho. If you like One Crazed Anarchist, if you like Lights Go Out, then pre-order it now. Do you want to start a war as the record? Do it on Amazon. And ready, we'll see you on Friday. AJ Styles, the hottest free agent in pro wrestling and the New Japan Pro Wrestling World Champion. Do you know how hard it is to become world champ when you're a foreigner in Japan? It's a huge accomplishment. Very excited to talk to AJ. We will see him on Friday. We'll see you Friday. And in the meantime, and in between times, stay hard, stay hungry, peace, love, and hugs, and a big yeah, boy!
You can download new episodes of Talk is Jericho every Wednesday and Friday at podcastone.com. That's podcastone.com.
Okay, keep your eyes closed.
Okay.
I want to show you my first ever painting.
All right.
Okay. Open your eyes.
Oh, that's a lot of colors and shapes.
So be honest. What do you think?
Well, I like how if you switch to Geico, you could save hundreds of dollars on car insurance.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
Yeah. Here, why don't I hold your paintbrush while you call them?
Geico, because saving 15% or more on car insurance is always a great answer.
Okay, Kevin, for the grand prize of $1 million, what color is the White House?
I know this.
5 seconds.
Oh, switching to Geico could save you a bunch of money on car insurance?
Okay. Judges? That's true, Kevin. They'll allow it. Congratulations. You're a winner.
Woo!
Geico, because saving 15% or more on car insurance is always a great answer.
Syria Peace Talks? I'm Ben Thomas with an AP News Minute. Syrian rebels have rejected peace talks being proposed by Russia. They're accusing Moscow of failing to pressure its ally, President Bashar Assad, to end the conflict. Christmas may be over, but the shopping isn't. Hazel Ginn was at Macy's Herald Square in New York today.
It's not too bad. Even we went up to the 9th floor, and we managed to get in a queue of about 4 deep, so not bad. Yeah, and then we went to another one, and it was only a couple, so we kind of timed it well, I think.
America's research group, which focuses on consumer behavior, projects holiday sales up about 5% this year. Harley-Davidson is placing a renewed emphasis on teaching people to ride as part of its efforts to attract more customers. The company is expanding the number of dealerships with a Harley Riding Academy. The move comes as the industry grapples with years of declining sales and an aging customer base. I'm Ben Thomas.